Fortunately, we are now beginning to see more and more people who are willing to speak out, raise their voices, take a stand. This is a very hopeful sign. And my sense is that it's due not only to the inescapable fact that things are indeed getting worse, but also because we are being inspired by the courageousness of others. Viruses are capable of spreading, but so is courage. Which brings me to tonight's program. Let me say it is an honor for me to be speaking here, not only with my dear friend Juanita Nelson, whose wisdom and integrity are well known far and wide, but also with our featured speaker, Scott Ritter, whose courageous speaking out about the situation in Iraq has been a great gift, a boon, a help, and a contagious inspiration to so many here and around the world. I want to just end by saying that Scott's presence here tonight reminds me that a little over 20 years ago, Trap Rock Peace Center hosted another famous insider, if you will, who dared to reveal to the public the lies and deceptions of our government. A person who, as it happens, was also, among other things, like Scott, a Marine Corps veteran. That was Daniel Ellsberg, whose release of the Pentagon Papers contributed to ending the war in Vietnam. I understand from talking to both Scott and Dan recently that they met for the first time not so long ago, and both have great admiration for each other. It's obvious why. And finally, just as an advertisement on behalf of the Veterans Education Project, for those of you who didn't pick up this yellow flyer outside, Dan Ellsberg will be speaking here on November 6th at Smith College, that's a Thursday, and on November 10th, a Monday, at Amherst College. Thank you.
Randy put that very well. I know this is Robbie Lepsier here filming, and we're so grateful for this message getting out, not only through independent filmmakers like Turning Tide Productions, but again, if you want to refer to these remarks tonight later, they will be posted, thanks to Charlie's work, at traprockpeace.org. So you've heard from Randy, our first director. You've heard from Matthew Layton, one of our co-founders. Francis Crowe is here tonight, one of the co-founders of Trap Rock Peace Center. Yeah. I see so many friends out here, and it takes each one of us doing what we can. It takes courage from each person doing their part. Whether you're leading a workshop, whether you're teaching a nonviolence training, whether you're painting banners, holding banners on a cold, freezing day over the roadside to invite your neighbors to really consider what we're coming to. Whatever your contribution, it is essential, and it is much appreciated. I think that when we get to the question and answer period, you know, I know that the keenness of your questions, the precision of your questions to Scott, will show what depth of understanding you have already and what depth of understanding you hope for, because we don't have all the answers yet. We've found a lot of them together in cooperation. But Scott's hard work on the ground in Iraq for 7 years, working on very tough problems, I hope he'll speak to a little bit. It's probably an old story to him, but not everyone's heard it, that disarmament can work. It does work. It has worked. We could say about Scott's comments when he came to Northampton, to Greenfield, to Boston, to Gloucester, so many places all around, that he was right. And each time that I've heard him speak, I've learned important new things. Please give a warm welcome to Scott Ritter.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you, Sonny, for the tremendous words of introduction. And thanks for giving me the honor and privilege of being here tonight, the most current rendition of the long, strange journey that has been the collaboration between Trap Rock Peace Center and a former Marine like myself. People and organizations that, if you studied at face value, would say that we're irreconcilably different. 12-year veteran in the Marine Corps, no pacifist here, working hand-in-hand on common cause with an organization dedicated to peace and pacifism. What I can say is Sonny and Charlie are successfully weaning me away from my roots, and sooner or later we'll be on the same page. But the journey that is my personal transformation, I think, is something that we need to reflect on in terms of the larger picture, which goes beyond me as a person, Trap Rock Peace Center as an organization, and gets into the issue of our country, the United States of America, who and what we are, and where we're going. There's some interesting talk coming up here about economics and about diseases. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm no doctor, but I am an American citizen who loves my country dearly. And America today is sick. It's infected with a disease that's killing the country that we live in, the country that we love, the country that we cherish. And if we, the people of the United States, can't recognize that we are infected, we will never come up with the cure that's necessary to not only kill the disease, but get us back on the path towards health. And what does health as a nation mean? I don't know. Again, I humbly examine my resume and note proudly that I was a 12-year veteran in the United States Marine Corps, an intelligence officer who served my country proudly. A couple years as a weapons inspector in Iraq, hunting down weapons of mass destruction. Tinkering in the fire department in my hometown of Del Mar, trying to learn about firematics and serving my community that way. But I'm not a sociologist, not somebody with a PhD on how society functions. So I can't tell you how to cure the disease, but I can tell you this. If you don't recognize the problem, you're not going to come up with the solution. So let's focus on some aspects of the problems that I can address. Ladies and gentlemen, we're at war in Iraq right now as we speak. It's not a thing of the past. Some people think that the rock and roll game, video game, is over. You know, Marines rumbling through the streets of Baghdad, statues of Saddam tumbling down, Iraqis with their hands in their air surrendering, helicopters flying around, boom, bang, the war's over. I mean, it's not shown on TV over and over as it was in March and April. But the war's far from over. Three Americans died today in Iraq in combat-related incidents. The war is far from over. This community has suffered a loss that cannot be replaced, a loss that cannot be defined. And the loss that this community feels is being felt in hundreds of communities around our country and will be felt in hundreds more. No, this war is far from over. This war, we were told in May by the president when he made a dramatic landing on an aircraft carrier off the coast of San Diego, the combat phase is over. It only cost us $55 billion, only a handful of lives. We don't, of course, talk about Iraqi lives because we only care about American lives, apparently. So we don't reflect on the tens of thousands of Iraqis whose lives were lost in the conduct of this war. The war was over, but now here we are, October, and we're told, well, it's not over. Not only is it not over, we haven't won it. Lieutenant General Sanchez has acknowledged this war is far from being won. We have a long way to go. He says to win this war, it will cost us even more lives and more national treasure. What price tag in lives will we put on this war? I don't know. I do know that Donald Rumsfeld says whatever the price is, it's militarily insignificant. It shows how much he cares about the men he ostensibly leads, men and women he leads. We've been told that the price tag for this war has gone up by an additional $87 billion. But that price won't win the war. We're at war, ladies and gentlemen. And the reality of that war is starting to come crashing home on Americans who were fooled, by and large, by the rhetoric set forth by the Bush administration regarding this war. Americans who didn't understand what war was, what war meant. Americans who allowed themselves and their ignorance to be used by the president and this administration to exploit the fear that is inherent in us all, fear that has been enhanced, so to speak, since September 11th, 2001, to allow the president to prey on this fear, to prey on this ignorance, to sell us a bill of goods about Iraq, a war on terror, and the necessity of the United States to preemptively respond to threats abroad in the name of national security. But is it in the name of national security? Why are we at war in Iraq? What is it all about? Complicated issues, complicated questions, easy answer. It's not about the national security. Plain and simple. The president told us that we were going to war with Iraq because Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction that threatened the United States of America. That in possessing these weapons, Iraq was in violation of Security Council resolutions calling for the disarmament of Iraq, thereby signaling the intent of Saddam Hussein to do ill with these weapons, allowing the president to hypothesize a link between Saddam Hussein and the forces of terror that did strike us on September 11, 2001, that namely being al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and saying that Saddam will transfer this weapons technology to the terrorists, and the terrorists will perpetrate yet another attack, but this time armed with these horrible weapons, these chemical weapons, these biological weapons, these nuclear weapons, these long-range missiles. And the effects of such attack will make 9/11 pale in comparison. Those are bold words. And when spoken by the President of the United States and echoed by his administration over and over and over again in a compliant media all too willing to help sell this message to the American people, it's tough for the individual American to say, no, Mr. President, because we are, by and large, ignorant, and we are fearful. We are told to be afraid. Since September 11th, we have the Department of Homeland Security that manages a national mood ring of colors that the president can change at his whim, telling us just how afraid we should be. The Department of Homeland Security can put out terrorist alert notices that the media will broadcast to us continuously 24 hours a day, saying, be afraid. Afraid of what? A terrorist attack. What kind of terrorist attack? Unspecified. Coming from where? We don't know. But be afraid. And so we are. We're very afraid. And in our fear, we look to the government to protect us. We say, we need protection. So the president says, to protect you, I need to go to war with Iraq. And many Americans, rather than sitting back and going, well, what's the link? They say, okay, Mr. President, okay. I tried to warn you before this war that it was a war that has no justification based upon what the president was saying existed in terms of an Iraqi threat. No one listened. I tried to say this is a war that we can't win. That if you go to war, is an A to Z proposition. You have to understand that. When you go to war to win a war, you start at A, but you got to get to Z to have victory. And Vietnam should have taught us that. Oh, we went to war in Vietnam, and we did some pretty neat stuff militarily. 1965, Ia Drang Valley, the first air cab took on two North Vietnamese divisions. Big fight, lots of dead people, boom, bang. And we emerged victorious on the battlefield, and everybody said no one can stand up to the American war machine. Because we got it all, baby. We got helicopters, artillery, brave men, willing to give their lives, all that guts and glory stuff. And we repeated Ia Drang in 66 and 67, 68, 69, 70. Heck, we kicked butt all over Vietnam. But in 75, it was an American being pulled out by a helicopter off the building in Saigon that signaled our defeat. Because you can't win a war when you're an illegitimate occupier of a nation opposed by a popular-based resistance. Vietnam taught us that, and Iraq is teaching us that same lesson. A, we invaded Iraq illegally. There is no legitimacy to our presence in Iraq today. That underscores every discussion about Iraq. We violated international law. The president said there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and the United Nations is unable or unwilling to fulfill its law. It passed a law saying Iraq must be disarmed. Iraq isn't disarmed. The president didn't tell us how he knows this. He just said he knows it. And because the United Nations is unable or unwilling to take action, the United States must. International law is not something we are bound to, he said, because international law is wrong here. The security of the United States is at stake. We can't rely on law to protect us. We must undergo modern-day equivalent of frontier justice. You know, frontier, it's apt, we're in a high school name. Front is, what is the definition of frontier? Frontier is that area between civilization and the wilderness. Frontier. You don't have pure civilized activity there. The rule of law does not firmly apply. You got some bad people running around. So frontier justice is a sheriff. Gary Cooper type. Tall, good looking, straps on the guns, walks down the city street, takes on the bad guys. Boom, 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 boom. Was that the rule of law? Nope. It was frontier justice. Gary Cooper was the good guy. He had to deal harshly with the bad guys. But that's not what the president gave us. He didn't have the courage to strap on the six guns and walk down the street and shoot the bad guys down. He bushwhacked us. See, bushwhacking's another term that we have to talk about when we bring in the Western analogy, because it's the most cowardly form of combat that took place in the West. Far from the Gary Cooper staring down the guys in the street, bushwhacking is a coward hiding behind a bush shooting somebody in the back. And that's what the president did to the American people. He shot us in the back. He lied to us about a threat coming from Iraq. He lied to us about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Now, before the war, I can give excuses to people who said, Scott, you know, I heard what you said. I respect your position. I know where you came from. But this is the president, man. He's got the CIA on his side. He's got the DIA. He's got NSA. He's got all those alphabet organizations that are feeding data to him. And you haven't been involved in that since 1998. So I'm going to lean on the side of the president here. Okay. You leaned on the president, and you found out that rather than a solid foundation, you had a house of cards that collapsed the second the first lie was exposed. Now what are you going to do? Now what are you going to do? Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? There aren't any. How do we know? Even the Bush administration has to acknowledge they can't find them. 4 months and $300 million into a post-war investigation, they haven't found a single weapon of mass destruction in Iraq. They haven't found a single program dedicated to the manufacture of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. What they found, or what they have alleged to find, are fragments. Bits and pieces. I've always said that since Iraq had a huge weapons of mass destruction program in the 1980s and early 1990s, that you got to view Iraq when you deal with weapons of mass destruction at this late stage in the game as a giant archaeological site. And you dig deep enough and you dig long enough, you're going to find evidence of these past programs. But you aren't going to find ongoing programs. Remember this. The president didn't stand up before us and say, we're going to war because an Iraqi scientist has one vial of botulinum toxin in his refrigerator that's been there since 1993. That's a threat to the national security of the United States of America that warrants the mobilization of 250,000 people. That's not what the president said. The president said, we're going to war because there are massive stockpiles of biological weapons, massive stockpiles of chemical weapons, long-range ballistic missiles, and a nuclear program that will manifest itself within 6 months with the manufacture of a nuclear device. And he exploited the fear and ignorance of the American people by putting his vice president on TV, who told us Iraq will have a nuclear bomb within 6 months. When asked where the smoking gun for this was, he says, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. And the Americans quaked in fear in their seats at home, and they supported this war. There is no nuclear program. There is no chemical weapons program. There is no biological weapons program. There is no long-range ballistic missile program. There are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Lesson one, United Nations weapons inspections worked. They succeeded in disarming Iraq. One of the lies the president said is we have to rush to war now because we can't trust the United Nations to do this very difficult job of disarming Iraq. Ladies and gentlemen, they did a pretty darn good job. And I tell you what, I will trust the return of UN weapons inspectors back in Iraq more than I will trust David Kaye wasting $600 million more of our taxpayers' fund to continue this politically motivated witch hunt. David Kaye is not in Iraq to search for the truth. That's for sure. Give you one example of how I know this. It's his own words. 120 ammunition supply points in Iraq, he tells us. 120, and they're out there, all over the place. And we haven't even begun to inspect them all, he says. And some of them might contain chemical and biological weapons. Now think about that. We went to war because of the chemical and biological threat posed by Iraq. We went to war to keep chemical and biological weapons out of the hands of terrorists. And you're telling me now that the President of the United States is going to sit back and do nothing when we suspect that chemical and biological weapons might be in an ammunition supply point? Because these supply points aren't protected. No American troops are there. They're open up. Paul Bremer came out, the head of the Coalition Provisional Authority, and said, yeah, these supply points, we've got to work on securing them. Some of those weapons used to blow up the UN headquarters came from these unsecured supply points. Okay. Why aren't you securing them? We don't have enough troops. All right, conventional weapons, I buy that. It takes time. But now we're told that there might be chemical and biological weapons there. Why aren't we securing them? Because there are no chemical and biological weapons there. If you think for one moment the United States military would stand by and allow ammunition supply points that potentially carried chemical and biological weapons to remain unsecured in a nation like Iraq, which today has become a magnet for international terror? No. David Kaye's lying to us. He's lying to us. He's in there for political purposes only. He's in there to buy the president time politically, to spin the data in a way which continues to confuse the American people about the truth that is Iraq. We've been lied to, we've been misled, we've been deceived, and now we're stuck in Iraq. And there's not going to be any elegant solution in getting us unstuck. There's not going to be peace with honor on this one, guys. It's ugly. The only way we're going to get out of Iraq, and I'll give you an analogy so you can think about it. Iraq is a giant fire. It's burning right now. The fuel that feeds that fire is the presence of American troops. Plain and simple. You want to put out the fire? Remove the fuel. Get the American troops out of Iraq. Now, you can't do that in a vacuum. You can't just snap your fingers, pull the American troops out, and expect everything to be rosy in Iraq. So there's going to have to be some things to take place. A, get the United Nations to step into that vacuum. Turn to the United Nations and give them the political control of Iraq that is required. B, turn the security of Iraq over to the Iraqis. Remobilize the Iraqi army that we demobilized. They're not all pro-Saddam supporters. They're Iraqi soldiers who will serve their country if called upon to do so. I don't want American soldiers doing over 900 detainments a night, 900 doors we kick down in Iraq a night, 900 men we roust out in front of their wives and children. We humiliate them in front of their family. We handcuff them. We beat them to the ground. We put a hood over their head. And then the next day, we return 896 of them back to their families because we didn't have anything on these guys to begin with. We hold four because we suspect they might be up to something no good. You know, we wouldn't allow that here in America. Why are we going to allow it over there? Why are we allowing American troops to do to the Iraqis what we would never allow our own police to do to us? It's hypocritical. It's un-American. It's not what we're about. We're about the rule of law. The United States isn't perfect. I think we should understand that from the start. We're all, you know, we all have that same disease. It's called being a human. We're not perfect. But as a nation, we stand for something good. Never forget that. We stand for something noble. We stand for the concept of individual liberties, individual civil liberties. The cornerstone of America is the concept of we, the people of the United States. We are the government. We are the fuel that drives this engine. We are the cells that make the American body work. Sometimes the cells come together and form a heart. Sometimes they come to form a lung. Sometimes they come to form a liver. But the bottom line is, they all serve the same body, which is the United States of America. So we're a good country. We're capable of doing great things. But bad things are being done in our name today. The President of the United States has lied to us. He has lied to Congress. He has lied to the international community. Congress has bought that lie, helped sell that lie to the American people. The media has been an effective sales force for this lie, compliantly repeating everything the president said. I'll give you a little story. In September of last year, I was called before CNN's executive board. All their bigwigs. I went down to Atlanta, sat down. There's their big guy. There's their second big guy. There's all their talking heads. And they subjected me to an hour and 45 minutes of cross-examination. You say this. How do you prove that? What's doing this? Boom, boom, boom. And I answered every question. I actually answered every question to their satisfaction. Because at the end, they said, okay, you got answers. They make sense. You're credible. The head guy turned to his talking heads and said, you can use Ritter as a source now. You can put him on air. We give him the stamp of approval. And I was so honored. I mean, it was just the defining moment of my life. And they said, do you have any questions? I said, just one. I respect CNN's search for integrity. I respect the fact that you grilled me like this before you could see fit to put me on air. But why don't you ask the same questions of the president or his administration? I mean, when the Secretary of Defense comes out and makes a bold pronouncement about bulletproof evidence linking Saddam Hussein with Al-Qaeda, why aren't you saying, well, show us this evidence. We demand this evidence. And when he doesn't give you the evidence, then don't repeat what he said to the American people as if it's fact. We need to empower ourselves with knowledge and information. That is the first step towards fixing what's wrong in America. Because when you are empowered with knowledge, when you are empowered with information, then you will have the courage to stand up and fight the fear. Fight the fear that's being sold to you by the president, by the media. And when you confront your fears, when you overcome your fears, you'll find that you will emerge victorious because the truth will out. When you are empowered with the truth, you will prevail. You're not going to prevail overnight. It's not going to be easy. It will be a long and difficult fight. But you will prevail. I'm a Marine. I come from a background of fighting, of combat, waging war. And I know that's not what you guys are about. But one of the things that motivated me as a Marine was a story they told us in officer training. You know, when it comes time to quit, when you're ready to throw down and run, when the going gets tough, you got to dig down and believe in something. The thing they taught us to believe in was the Marine Corps. That you can't run because you'll betray the Marines. You'll betray those that became before you. You'll betray your country. You have to stay. They told us a story about a Marine Corps rifle company in Korea. It was a rifle company tasked with holding a hill over the last bridge out of the Chosin Reservoir where a Marine division was trapped. If that hill fell to the Chinese would cut the bridge and a good portion of Marines would be cut off from rescue and they would be massacred. They would be annihilated. That hill had to be held. And the snow was blowing and it was cold and 136 Marines marched up the hill. And they were frostbitten, they were hungry, they were far from home, they were scared. And they got to the top of that hill and their company commander turned to them, stuck his rifle in the ground and he says, this company will fight and die here, but we will not run. And that night, those 136 Marines repelled thousands of Chinese. Thousands of Chinese. And they didn't run. Over 70% of them died that night. The rest of them were wounded. But when the morning came, they held the hill and the Marines were able to escape. What does this have to do with you? You guys are in the fight of your lives right now. You need to understand that America is at a vital crossroads. If we continue to go down the path that the President of the United States is leading us, we will cease to exist as the United States of America. We can call ourselves Americans, but we won't be Americans. See, to be Americans, you have to believe in something. And that's something that unites us all, regardless of our gender, regardless of our religion, regardless of our race, is the Constitution of the United States of America, the defining document. And the Bush administration no longer views the Constitution as the foundation upon which they derive their policies. The two documents the Bush administration now relies upon are the Patriot Act when it comes for domestic issues and the National Security Strategy when it comes for foreign policy. You see, the Bush administration couldn't support the Patriot Act if they believed in the Constitution because the Patriot Act is a frontal assault on the Constitution of the United States. And the Bush administration is feeding you a line when they say we want to be a member of a larger global community because the National Security Strategy of the United States, promulgated in September of last year, is not about being a good member of the global community. It's about promoting American imperialism, plain and simple. It says the United States will exploit our overwhelming strength militarily and economically to impose our will on those areas of the world that we see fit, not what the global community sees fit, but we see fit, and we can act preemptively if necessary in departure from internationally agreed upon norms, such as the United Nations Charter. When you say you're going to step away from the United Nations Charter, understand what that means. We are signatories to the Charter. Article 6 of the Constitution, I hate to bring up the Constitution again, but we must talk about it. Article 6 is very clear. When we enter into an international agreement or treaty that has been ratified by 2/3 of the Senate of the United States of America, that is the law of the land. We are signatories of the United Nations Charter. The United Nations Charter foregoes war as a way of resolving disputes between nations. It says that there are two ways in which we can go to war. One is in legitimate self-defense, Article 51, if we have been invaded. The second one is if the Security Council, of which we control with our seat and our veto, the Security Council passes a Chapter 7 resolution recognizing a situation that exists that threatens international peace and security and authorizes the member states to use military means or other means to resolve the situation. Those are the two means. None of those exist in Iraq today. So the President, in going to war with Iraq, in bringing the war on terror home through the Homeland Security, through the Patriot Act, is launching a frontal assault on that which defines us as a people. So what are we going to do? We, the people, have got to say not one step back. We will not retreat. I bring my Marine Corps background here not to encourage you to wage war, but to beg of you to wage peace. You wage peace by arming yourselves with the most powerful weapon possible, and that is the power of truth. And the truth is the President lied about Iraq. Use that as your bayonet, stick it in the ground, and say, right now, rally around me. The President lied about Iraq. Because you know what will happen? People will start to gravitate to you. People will start to say, you're right. And as soon as people acknowledge that they have been lied to about Iraq, suddenly the whole venue of lies that we have been told by the President come to bear. See, people don't care about Iraq. Let's be honest. Some people here do. The vast majority of Americans don't. Don't tell me we're going to war because we care about the Iraqi people. We don't. Not collectively. Don't tell me about the mass graves. Because the majority of those mass graves were dug in 1991 after we encouraged the Kurds and the Shia to rise up against Saddam and did nothing while Saddam slaughtered them and put 30 to 40,000 of them in the ground. Don't tell me it's taken us a decade to suddenly recognize that, oh my goodness, there's mass graves in Iraq. And if we're going to talk about the 30 or 40,000 that went in the ground in 1991, what about the 1.5 million that went in the ground from 1991 to 2003, people who died under U.S.-backed economic sanctions? We went to war with Iraq because the President told us a threat existed to our national security, a threat that was defined by weapons of mass destruction. There are no weapons of mass destruction, so let that be your rallying cry. The president lied. And when people start to reflect on the number of dead Americans coming home, when people start to reflect on the fact that we are bankrupting ourselves morally and fiscally through this war, when people start to say, my goodness, where's the money for my schools? Where's the money for my health care? Where's the money for my infrastructure? Where's the money for America? And recognize instead that money is being depleted abroad in an illegal war of aggression, they will come to you. They will come to those who stand up for the truth. They will come for those who are empowered with the knowledge to overcome the fear that the Bush administration is selling us on a daily basis. And to show you the level of ignorance in America and how much work you have to do, understand this. The president told us in the lead up to the war, every time he talked about Saddam Hussein, he said 9/11. He brought up the tragedy that was 9/11. He dishonored the 3,000 Americans and others who perished that day. By linking their deaths with his own ideologically and politically motivated war ambitions, he said that there is a link between Saddam and Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And his administration said the same thing over and over again. Now that we've been in Iraq for 6 months, we're finding out that there is no link between Saddam and Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. None whatsoever. And the evidence of this is so compelling that even the president has had to back away from his pre-war assertions, pre-war allegations, unsustained as they were, and say, no, we haven't found a link. Haven't found a link at all. His cabinet's had to say the same thing. And yet, 70% of the American people still believe that Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda were tied together in the events of 9/11. How do you begin to overcome this level of ignorance? It's not going to be easy, ladies and gentlemen, but it is required, because we have to get the American public to understand that we are infected by a disease that seeks to exploit the fear and the ignorance that exists in this country, a disease that minimizes the concept of being a good citizen while enhancing the concept of being a good consumer. I mean, the president himself, after 9/11, what was the solution? Go out and buy. Go out and buy. Why? Because he wants good consumers. He doesn't want good citizens. He wants people who have wrapped themselves in a cocoon of comfort. People, as long as he can keep waddling down a relative path of prosperity, will be blind to what he does in their name. That may be good consumer, but that is the worst possible kind of citizen. A citizen must be engaged, must be involved, must invest his or herself in their community. And we all need to do that. This is the battle for America being waged right now. The culminating point of this battle will be November 2004. If President Bush is reelected, I tell you this, this nation is in deep trouble, because his reelection will define how we devolve as a democracy and how we evolve as an imperial power. And if I know anything about American history, I know that we fought a revolutionary war to free ourselves from the forces of imperialism, and yet today that is the direction we are coming. We have to fight and win the battle in 2004. The key to victory is what I call the ABCs of restoring democracy. Anything but Bush and Cheney.